audio.
A 100 years ago, a rain of nuclear bombs obliterated civilization in a few minutes of blazing horror. It was the end of the world. Doomsday, sky dark. With the first nuclear explosion, the tissue-thin tapestry of civilization was ripped apart. The rule of law was replaced overnight with the somber, draconian edict of survival of the fittest. Cannibals hunted prey, cold hearts brutally raided farms, and slavers seized anybody they could as chattel. Electricity was seldom seen, starvation universal, rape a daily event, death the only known means of escape. This is America in the late 21st century. Welcome to the Deathlands. Cutting Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Barrett Whitener. With performances by Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, Thomas Penny, Kate Torrey, and David Elias. Deathlands 53, Savage Armada. Even as the swirling electronic mists began to fade, the first shock of pain shot through his body, and Ryan Cotter knew that something was terribly wrong with the jump.
Fucking hell.
The one-eyed warrior slumped to the cold concrete floor of the Mattran's chamber and gagged on the sour bile that filled his throat.
Oh.
The big man swallowed a few times to clear his mouth.
Fire blast.
They hadn't had a jump this bad in weeks. For one terrible moment, he wondered if the machinery had malfunctioned, scrambled their insides, or something equally awful. But then the convulsions racking his body began to subside. Ryan could hear the moans and curses of the others around him. Nobody was screaming, and there was no smell of blood. No malfunk then, just a rad, blasted, bad jump. Dimly, he could sense the others spreading out, all instinctively trying to get away from the source of their pain. Time passed slowly, and Ryan finally summoned enough strength to sit and brush the wild black hair from his sweaty face. There was the expected stink of sweat and puke in the air, but much stronger than normal. Usually, the life support system of a redoubt cleared away any unpleasant traces within minutes. The atmosphere in the underground bunkers was usually scrubbed clean and smelled of chem disinfectants. Not this time. Ryan didn't like that. Adjusting the patch that covered his ruined left eye, Ryan blinked his right into focus and weakly glanced about.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
All of his friends were present and looking as bad as the Deathlands warrior still felt. Sprawled on the floor of the Mattran's unit, with one hand extended onto the concrete apron outside, was a tall, slim man with silvery hair. Fighting for breath, the old man wore an old-fashioned frock coat and a frilly white shirt drenched in sweat. An ebony walking stick with an elaborate silver lion's head was clenched in a twitching hand, and a monstrously huge revolver with two barrels jutted from the holster on his hip. The leather belt supporting the hand cannon was made entirely of lumpy pouches tightly buttoned shut.
You... you okay, Doc?
Have we crossed the River Styx, my good Ryan?
There was another bad smell in the air. Something familiar that Ryan couldn't quite identify.
No hell.
It lay under the stink of their own tortured bodies, like the scum under a river of sewage. Faint, but bad. Ryan seemed to have some trouble focusing his thoughts. Another side effect of the jump? Fumbling at his side, he found a canteen and tried to force his hands to unscrew the top without spilling the water everywhere.
We're not dead yet, you old coot.
Slumped over a canvas bag, a wild array of dreadlocks masked Mildred's features. A sleek revolver was holstered at the stocky black woman's hip, a battered tin canteen draped over a shoulder. As she struggled to roll onto her side, a canvas lump was exposed as a bulky backpack patched with a dozen different pieces of cloth that almost hid the small red cross.
As always, Madam Mildred, I bow to your vast and profound expertise of vaunted medical knowledge.
Ah, stuff it, Doc. Ryan, what happened?
Just a bad jump.
Every passing moment was pouring new strength into Ryan's body, but that odd smell was still lingering about them like flies over a corpse.
Bad. Worst jump ever.
Sitting with his back to a wall of the unit, John Barrymore Dix rubbed his pale face with both hands. He covered his features for a moment, massaging his temples. A compact Uzi lay at his side, while an S&W 12-gauge shotgun was draped across his shoulder. On the floor was a canvas bag with a dull red stick of dynamite and length of bright yellow fuse peeking from under the loose flap.
Here, take a drink, JB.
Thanks, Ryan. Any takers?
Here.
Shifting positions, JB passed the canteen, and Christy Roth drank deeply, a trickle of water flowing down either side of her full lips. Her khaki jumpsuit was partially unbuttoned, exposing a wealth of cleavage. Draped over her strong shoulder was a bearskin coat, the fur matted from being badly cured. A Smith & Wesson revolver rode a holster near the buckle of her gun belt, the leather loops full of shiny brass.
Ah, oh, thanks.
In the distant corner of the hexagonal chamber, Dean Cotter, Ryan's son, was on his hands and knees, retching quietly. Nobody paid any attention to the teen. All the friends had gotten jump sickness at one time or another. It was the price they paid for traveling the Deathlands in the Mattran's chambers.
What happened, Ryan? Some sort of malfunk?
Yeah, seems likely.
At least not chilled. Or a fry brain.
So far, Jack. So far.
Nodding in agreement, Jack Lauren was breathing heavily as if gathering strength for an attack. The albino teen's shoulder-length hair was the color of snow, and his strange ruby-red eyes peered out through the tangles like the spotting laser of a sniper rifle. A dozen leaf-bladed throwing knives were hidden among the folds of his clothes, and a huge .357 Magnum Colt Python revolver rested backward in a belt holster. With fumbling fingers, J.B. retrieved a pair of wire-rimmed glasses from his shirt pocket and gently put them on.
Where the hell are we?
Grimacing from sore stomach muscles, Ryan moved to the door, which had a square of plain glass in its middle. He scanned the immediate area, and seeing no threat, he turned the plain knob and opened the door.
Don't know. I never saw this redoubt before.
The domed room was made of corrugated steel, just like the kind used on the floors of big rig trucks, but welded together in a crazy quilt pattern as if assembled randomly from whatever was available. Across the room was a door that looked like it had come off a submarine. That was totally wrong.
It's not a redoubt. At least looks like it was thrown together.
Fireblast. Another bastard homemade gateway.
Aw, shit.
Mildred drew the ZKR target pistol from her belt and thumbed back the hammer.
Homemade hellholes.
Dean, are you okay?
Dean gamely but slowly raised himself off the cold floor. He wobbled a bit, the heavy backpack on his shoulders obviously throwing him off balance. The teen grimaced and slowly stood erect, as if defying the very laws of gravity.
I'm fine.
I'm sure you are.
Hiding a smile, Christy turned her back to the boy. Puberty was upon him, and the strong need to be accepted as another adult was making itself felt. But then Dean was a battle-scarred veteran of 100 fights. He owned a knife, a working blaster, a pocketful of ammo, and carried more food in his pack than most poor bastards ate in a month. In the Deathlands, that not only made Dean a rich man, but a formidable opponent. He possessed a younger version of his father Ryan's strength and speed. Christy had no doubt that he would one day be a formidable warrior. Taking a rag from his back pocket, Dean wiped the sour drool from his mouth, then tossed the soiled cloth aside. Controlling his breathing, the boy forced his hands to start patting his clothes to make sure his Browning high-power blaster and knife were present. He knew they were, but it was a good trait to hone. He'd seen enough SEC men jump from a height and charge into battle, only to find their blaster gone, fallen from its holster when the SEC man had hit the ground.
Anybody recognize this place?
Not I.
Doc nervously clicked the lion's head on his stick and slid out a few feet to the steel sword hidden inside, only to slide it closed again with a snap of his wrist.
I've never seen steel chambers before. Looks like it was built from spare parts.
Maybe it was. What the...
The overhead lights flickered briefly. The companions froze in place, watching the ceiling. The fixture had 6 fluorescent tubes, 4 dark. And if the remaining 2 blew, they'd be in total darkness. Easy targets if attacked. As the strobing tubes stabilized again, Ryan went to the door and closely inspected the curved oval of steel. The weld marks were plainly visible. No effort had been made to file them smooth or paint them. Ryan placed a palm against the metal, which was oddly cold. For a moment, he thought he felt a vibration in the steel, but then it was gone. As a precaution, he backed away.
Yeah, this was thrown together.
Then maybe we should leave. Who knows what's out there?
No need stay. Let's go.
Makes sense. Let's blow and hope for better luck next location.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
The flickering lights flashed brightly, then winked out completely, plunging the chamber into near-total darkness. The companions froze.
Triple red.
Ryan snicked the safety off his blaster. Quickly, the others drew their weapons, then dug into their pockets and unearthed greasy candles, lighting them with pre-dark SIG lighters. The cheap butane lighters were good for thousands of lights and had cost next to nothing before Skydark. Now they were worth a baron's ransom. Rummaging in her med kit, Mildred found her old battered flashlight. She flicked the switch. The squat tube gave off only a weak yellow illumination.
Damn.
She turned it off and started to squeeze the pump handle on the side to operate the tiny generator inside and recharge the miniature batteries. After a few moments, the light came back strong, the clear white light filling the chamber. However, Mildred had noticed that the batteries were holding a charge for consistently shorter periods, and sadly knew that soon it would be dead.
Save it, Mildred.
Moving quietly, Christy and Dean anchored their candles on opposite sides of the room, while the rest waited with fingers on triggers. Minutes passed in silence.
Fuck this. Let's go.
Ryan walked into the MAT trans unit. The companions followed close behind, leaving the candles in place in case they were attacked before the MAT-TRANS activated. Ryan closed the door to activate the jump, but nothing happened.
Shit.
He hit the LD button, but it felt loose, and the swirling mists remained inactive.
Trapped.
JB, the door.
Ryan walked from the unit and took a defensive position near the portal. Mildred clicked on her flashlight, and JB went to the door, kneeling before the wheel lock. Expertly, he ran his hands along the sides and surface of the smooth metal. Then, pulling some mechanical tools from his pockets, he quickly checked the jam and locking mechanism.
No booby traps I can find, but who knows what's on the other side.
Grimly, Ryan holstered the Sig Sauer pistol and slid the Steyr SSG-70 off his shoulder. The long blaster was freshly cleaned from before the jump, its rotary mag filled with live rounds. Working the bolt, the one-eyed warrior eased off the safety. Behind him, the others spread out in the short arc of a firing line, every weapon trained on the door.
JB, open it.
Flexing his hands, JB gripped the wheel, then paused and released it. Pulling a can of oil from a pocket, he carefully dripped a few drops of the precious lube onto the stem of the wheel, then along the jamb of the door where hinges should be located. Tucking the can away, the armorer tightened his fingerless leather gloves, took hold, and started to turn the wheel.
Yeah.
It refused to budge at first.
Yeah.
The lock slowly disengaged. JB quickly moved out to one side and swung the Uzi into its usual position. Reaching out with the muzzle of the Steyr, Ryan gave the door a hard tap and it swung easily aside. Instantly, a cloud of dark fumes flowed into the chamber. Covering their mouths, the companions hastily retreated into the Mat-Trans unit to get away from the spreading gas. As the cloud filled the chamber, it reached the candles on the wall, and they winked out instantly. The companions scrambled to find bits of cloth to use as masks against the encroaching cloud, when a familiar smell reached them, and everybody relaxed.
Ah, shit. Wag exhaust.
Inside a gateway?
Well, at least there's nobody in the next room.
Hopefully.
Making me feel dizzy.
Christy touched her temples, her hair lying limply on her shoulders, hardly moving.
Can't stay here. No vents. I'm on point, people. Let's go.
Quickly, the companions prepared their weapons. Jack eased one of his many knives loose and cocked back the hammer on his Colt Python. Christy checked the load in her SNW-38 revolver, while Mildred did the same with her checkmate ZKR-38 target pistol. Dean dropped the clip of his 9mm Browning high power to check the load, then slammed the mag back into the grip of his semi-automatic blaster.
Lead the way, Ryan.
Meanwhile, JB pulled back the bolt on his Uzi submachine gun and reached behind to pump the action on his SNW M4000 shotgun.